Thank you, Rabbi, for your kind introduction. Can you all hear clearly? And thank you also to Phil. Oh, sorry. Thank you also to Phil Rosen, for putting together all the details to enable me to share with you. The topic you've asked me to speak about, I guess, is a very important one. Let me ask you. If I speak, can you hear?
Yes.
No? How do I adjust this?
Whoops.
I've turned it off for now.
Okay, you can turn it on. And we'll just turn it a little up.
Can you hear?
Okay. Is that good?
Is this good?
Yes.
We can take a vote on it.
I've waited a long time for it to be good.
The title you've asked me to speak about is Building an Attitude of Gratitude. So I understand that the entire Kehillah, it's just a test, has been working on this for a year. Is that right?
No, just starting.
Just starting. Okay. So I'm going to ask you to borrow, if I may, your imagination for a few moments. Imagine I'm going to give out to each of you a card. And on the card is the amount of money that I will give to you tonight in cash. And on every single one of them is $100 million. So just play along for a few moments. I give out $100 million on your way out tonight. You just buy one CD and you get the cash. Now just imagine each one of you, how your lives are totally changed because of this cash in hand. You can retire your unborn grandchildren. Now, there's one person in the audience, and just pretend for a moment it's you. One person in the audience that instead of getting 100 million, gets 1 million. Let me ask you, how do you feel? This gentleman, it doesn't bother at all. Is there anyone that feels a little bit, why am I less than everyone else? Yitzhak? See?
I feel cheated.
Yeah, I feel cheated. Here I've given 100 times more to everyone else, and you got one. And what's my answer to you? I didn't owe you
anything.
So anything you receive is
bonus.
All bonus. It's all plus. So is it really a whole lot different in life in general? What does God owe me? How much does he owe me? Seriously speaking. I have Dr. Glanner here in the audience. Maybe you can help me over here. What, statistically, what's the chances that a child, the zera, the seed from a male, impregnated into the female, what's the chances that particular seed will actually become fertilized and an embryo and a child?
It's well less than 100.
It's less than 1 in 100. So, the chances of us actually being born is less than 1 in 100. Is that a good bet? Would you bet on that? You've got 100 chances of not being born, and yet we were born. So, we've already won the lottery of life. How much does God owe me? And the answer is? Zero! So, if someone has more than I do, is that a reason for me to feel less grateful? Or is gratitude an attitude of counting what's already in my life? Let me share with you the following. You know, what is the essence of a Jew? In biblical Hebrew, we always look at the language to know the meaning of anything. One of the names we give ourselves is Yisrael. Another one is Ivri. The third most common name of all is Yehudi. And Yehudi comes from the tribe of Judah. But what is the shoresh? What is the root of this word, Yehuda? Haidah. What does Haidah mean? Haidah means thanks. And the same word actually means vidui. Vidui means admission. Why is it that God chose one word with two meanings? Haidah, vidui, comes from the same shoresh. Because admission and gratitude is really the same thing. Because what is gratitude? It's an admission that I owe you. I'm in debt to you. So the essence of a Jew essentially is, I'm here to be grateful. I'm here to be honest in counting what you have already granted me, gifted me in my life. You know, it's interesting. We say Moedeh Ani every morning, but before we finish the sentence, what have we actually said? When we say Moedeh Ani, before we finish the sentence, what, translate the words, what have we actually said? For those still awake. Moedeh Ani, I am a thank youer. I'm here to be grateful. Before we even say what we're grateful for, my soul, you've returned to me. I went to bed last night, I had no contract with God. He didn't owe me to wake me up this morning. So the fact that I woke up this morning is the greatest demonstration of what? God's love for us. That He hasn't given up hope in my ability to accomplish something, to achieve something, to perhaps change. The only person I was created to change. Moedeh Ani, before we say what we're grateful for, we are describing our essence. I'm a Jew, and the essence of a Jew is to be grateful. I thank you. I'm here to say thank you. But it goes more than that. Think about it for the moment. Who are we saying is the one that's receiving appreciation when we thank God for our soul? Who's the one that we are really appreciating? Think about it. It sounds as though I'm being grateful to God. But think for a moment. God is returning my soul. So, who is He demonstrating His appreciation to? It's really about me. When we say Moedeh Ani, it's not about giving God thanks. Because, is God in need of my thank yous? Or is He perfect without them? So when God asks me to be grateful, to tune into my essence, to be honest about the debt I owe, it's not so much about Him receiving my thanks, but me recognizing that I'm deserving, worthy of His returning my soul. In other words, we are in a certain way complimenting ourselves. We're saying that if you, God, haven't given up hope in me, how much more so I should not give up hope in me. The biggest proof that you love me, want me, haven't given up hope is the fact that you woke me up this morning, returned my soul. So in a certain sense, it's not about gratitude to God who doesn't need my thanks. It's actually me being appreciative of me. It's about me recognizing that you, God, I'm not only grateful to the giver, but in a certain sense I'm really saying I appreciate the receiver because you deem me worthy of life. On a deeper level perhaps, or parallel level, gratitude is really a training in happiness. Because one way to describe happiness is what? To count what I don't yet have that will make me happy? That when my spouse is more loving, then I'll be happy. When my children are more respectful, then I'll be happy. When my mother-in-law, just swallowing, sorry. When my mother-in-law or my father-in-law is more appreciative of how much I invest in this relationship, in this marriage, then I'll be happy. When my boss gives me a raise in salary, then I'll be happy. When my brother-in-law, sister-in-law are more understanding, when my clients bite the deal, then I'll be happy. When I lose weight, then I'll be happy. Who am I giving the power or control of my happiness to? Is it my choice? Or is it really to something outside of me? See, if happiness is my choice, what is that choice? As long as I make you responsible for me feeling grateful in life, you are the one who has to perform. You are the one who has to meet my expectations. And when you don't, I'll be unhappy, ungrateful. And comes along the Torah and tells us something very interesting. Eizehu Ashir, who is the one that's considered wealthy? Strange that they use this metaphor for money. That money somehow is helping me to understand what is the wealth that we're referring to. Eizehu Ashir hasameach bechelkoi, the one who enjoys his portion. Asks the Medrash Rabbah, Eizai Chelkai. What is his portion? Ladies and gentlemen, madam, your name is?
Sarah.
Sarah, if I offer you $5 million cash tonight for one eye, would you be willing to part with one eye for $5 million? Okay, package deal. $20 million for both. No deal? You're not interested. Okay, sir, your name is?
David.
David, $5 million for one arm. No deal? $20 million for both hands? No deal? Is there anyone here who's willing to part with a leg for $10 million? $50 million for both legs. No candidates. You know, there used to be a program on TV. I don't know anything about TV, of course, but there was a program apparently called The $6 Million Man.
Yes.
Peanuts! I mean, $6 million? We wouldn't part with small parts of our body. These aren't even our major organs. And yet, Eizehu Ashir, who is a wealthy person, asks the Medrash Tanhuma, well, what's his chelik that he's happy with? Answers the Medrash Tanhuma, Einayim, Shinayim, Yadayim, Raglayim. What's the first letter of Einayim? Ayin. What's the first letter of Shinayim, teeth? Shin. What's the first letter of Yadayim? Hands. Yud. What's the first letter of Raglayim? Feet, legs. Resh. Eizehu Ashir Hasameach B'chelkoi, the one who is happy, counts, is grateful for his portion. What's his portion? Dai Shechai. The Medrash concludes, it's enough to be alive. If I'm alive, then paying the mortgage, career, family, car, feeling that I'm moving ahead in my personal growth or spiritual growth, that's all bonus! That's all plus! But what is real Ashirut? What's the beginning starting point of true wealth? Gratitude for being alive and healthy. Let's move forward a little bit. What about those who would say, well, I'm not enjoying such good health, so what have I got to be grateful for? I have a friend who was diagnosed with terminal disease. Doctor gave him 6 months to live. But when he couldn't pay the bill, doctor gave him another 6 months. Why are you laughing? Oh, I thought I was joking. Okay, fine. So, let me share with you, Buna Shulman. Buna Shulman, special lady, was the principal in Yeshiva Spring Valley Girls. She passed away, Tisha B'Av, about 8-9 years ago, maybe more. 56 years old. A woman that had an exceptional memory. She remembered the name of every single child in her school. She not only memorized every child's name, but she had something kind to say to a parent or grandparent she would meet on Shabbos about that child that week. Phenomenal. It's interesting that her 9 children, 8 boys, 1 daughter, spoke about their mother at the Hespedim. And the boys made the following claim. Avi Shulman, many of you may have heard of him, this was his wife. She passed away from cancer, suffered from it for 2 years. And they said that of the entire 2 years that she was suffering, how many times did she complain about her suffering? Now this is unusual. She didn't complain once. To the extent that when she was marrying off one of her children, her daughter, 3 weeks before she passed on, and it was clear there was no way, al pi teva, according to the laws of nature, that this woman was going to have a turnaround in this disease. 3 weeks before she passes away, she's walking down the aisle, arm in arm with her daughter. And her daughter's crying. And the mother's smiling. At the photos, daughter's crying, mother's smiling. And the mother turns to her daughter and says, why are you crying? And daughter says, mommy, how can we not cry? And she says to her daughter, I don't understand. Don't you see what God has given me? He has allowed me to live 56 years. And in those years, he permitted me to raise all my children to adulthood. I've married all but one of my children. Don't you see the kindness that he's filled my life with? Why are you crying? See, she was fixated on what did God give me? And she was keeping inventory. As opposed to what I have not yet got that should make me more happy in my life. I think of Rabbi Schwab. I'll never forget, this was a personal encounter when I spent a Pesach with him in a hotel that shall not be mentioned in the Catskills. I hope no one knows which one I'm referring to. And his grandson would wheel him after the Hashkama Minyan, the early morning Minyan during Yom Tov and during the week, and we would make Kiddush in a small room. And there I was with Rabbi Schwab, Hatzal, and his grandson Natan. Rabbi Schwab was always smiling. There he is in his wheelchair. Here's a giant of a human being that for the past almost decade was crippled. And his grandson asked his grandfather, "Umpa, how is it that even when I ask grandma, she says that in all the years you've been crippled, she never recalls once you saying an unkind word about your immobility. She never heard you once complain. And you always seem to have a constant smile on your face. What is the secret of your serenity? What is the secret of your happiness?" And this was the answer Rabbi Shimon Schwab gave. I'll never forget. He said, "I look at life in the following way. Imagine someone gave you $1 million. And 70 years later asks you for $1,000 back. Would you feel ungrateful, bitter, angry, resentful? Or would you say, oh my gosh, it's all you're asking for? You know what, you gave me $1 million 70 years ago. Do you know what I was able to do with $1 million 70 years ago? With that investment, I was able to marry off all my children, had financial security for my entire family. I owe you so much more, and you're only asking for $1,000 back. I'm only too grateful." Said Rabbi Shimon Schwab, "I look at my legs the same way. God gave me my legs for a good 70 years. After 70 years, he asked for them back. Is that a reason for me to be ungrateful? You know what? If God forbid I lost my legs, I would feel... I don't know I would be so easily, quickly to be grateful." But Rabbi Shimon Schwab essentially put it this way. If I'm stuck on believing that the most that I identify with in my life is me, my body, then if I lose my legs, God forbid, of course I'm going to be devastated. But what happens if my legs are only part of my total life portfolio? I think you would agree there are people in this world today, you remember the 1929 Wall Street crash, the depression, that people literally jumped out of windows when they saw investments that they had built over years and sometimes decades become nothing but paper and worthless. Their lives were reduced to zero. And in that impossible expectation that life is worth going on, they gave up their lives. Let me ask you, if it's really true that our eyes are worth millions, hands, legs worth millions, then what's the difference between one person who enjoys their health and another that's complaining? If not, am I keeping inventory of what you've already given me? Rabbi Shimon Schwab, did he suddenly appreciate his legs after he lost them? Like one goes to St. Moritz or Vermont and skis, God forbid, breaks an arm or a leg and says, you know, I can't wait till I'm rid of these crutches, this sling, and I'm mobile again. I will be so grateful when I can walk and run again. And yet what's reality? Will I really be grateful, or familiarity will probably kick in? So came along Rabbi Shimon Schwab, and essentially, I think what he was saying was the following. Did he suddenly appreciate his legs? Or was he keeping inventory over many years and decades? So that if/when a person would have a loss financially, or in the family, God forbid, or a setback in a marriage, a divorce, a setback in a child not going in the same direction, or God forbid a setback medically, how will I respond? Will I make my happiness hang on the difference between where the situation is now and what I want it to be? Or have I been keeping inventory of the many pages on my total portfolio? In which case I have a bigger context to borrow from in identifying what's true ashirut. What's true wealth? Is it being happy with my health, my wealth, my family, and always being on the up and never on the down, and consistently making enough money and a little bit beyond, and my spouse being agreeable almost all, if not all the time, and that will make me happy, and the children being respectful almost all or all the time, and then I'll really be happy, and my boss really appreciating me, and my mother-in-law, father-in-law, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, and all members of extended family appreciating me. Is that reality? No! That's a prescription for frustration! No one ever walked the earth that could say, I have a perfect marriage, perfect children, perfect husband, mother-in-law, father-in-law, brother, sister, parents, perfect health, perfect finances, all the time. Nobody ever walked this planet who could make that claim. So the question is not, how big a gap is there between what I have now and what I don't yet have, be it in my health, wealth, family, personal growth? The difference will always be in how much am I counting that's already in my life. Gratitude, happiness are synonymous. There's really no difference between the two. That when I'm unhappy, it's because I'm not counting what I do have, I'm counting what I don't yet have that I think will make me happy. Rabbi Shimon Schwab is essentially telling me that I need a page for my legs, count my legs. And in my total life portfolio, not a financial portfolio that says this is what my personal worth is. My personal worth is more than my financial assets. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a mature audience. How much is a happy marriage worth? I have a friend, her name is Sandra. I hadn't seen her for a few weeks, and she came to shul last week, and I said, Sandra, is everything okay? I haven't seen you for a while. No, Rabbi, things are not okay. It's Irish, you understand. So I said, what happened? My husband died. Your husband died? I had no idea. I'm really sorry. No, were you there when it happened? Of course I was there. I didn't know. I'm sorry. Did he have any parting words to you? Of course he did. So what were his last words? His last words to me were, Sandra, put down the gun. Nobody has a perfect husband, a perfect wife, a perfect child all the time. It just doesn't exist. If I have a half-decent marriage, should I have, if I have a happy marriage, should I have another page on my total life portfolio? Not just one page for my finances, another page for my eyes, another page for my hands, another page for my legs, another page for my lungs, my heart, my nervous system. I should have a page for my children, happy children, healthy children, each child. Extended family, community, leadership, friends. Oichevrusa mesusa. The question is not how much is there in my life. If only I had, I would be so much more happy and grateful for. That's not the question. The question I need always to ask myself is how many pages that already exist in my total life portfolio have I been counting? Because happiness and gratitude are synonymous. There's really no difference between the two. Some of you get the Hamadiya magazine. This Passover was a special edition. Personal Glimpses, Volume 2. The first one came out last year during Pesach. Page 43, phenomenal story of a Dr. Rachamim Melamed Cohen. This gentleman, in his 60s, religious Jew, held an important place in the Ministry of Education in Israel, was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig disease, and over the last 11 years has disintegrated to the point where the only part of his body that now moves are his eyes, inside their sockets. And a special technology enables that there's a camera in front of a computer screen that's fixated on his eyes. And when he looks at the screen has all the letters of the alphabet. And when he looks at a specific letter, the camera picks up on the letter he's looking at and prints it out. So that he communicates with his wife, his children, his grandchildren, and the over 20,000 emails he gets over the year, he communicates to people around the world. He's written 7 books in this state. He communicates with people who are Jews and non-Jews asking him for advice because he claims he's never been more productive in his life than since this disintegration. He's never been more appreciative and happy in life than since this terrible disease has taken over. How could that be? How can you explain that? What's the logic? Sadly, the answer is, much of my attention is on my body and the externals, my car, my home, my career. And only if, God forbid, something is not functional in my health, then I really start counting how important my health is. Or something goes wrong in the marriage, then I start really, oh, I better fix this relationship. Or something goes wrong with my kid, and I start, why didn't you get the rest of your score? Why is it only a 93? What happened to the 7? Why didn't you get 100? If I'm counting what I, you, my child, whoever they are, have not yet accomplished, I'm playing the same game of being ungrateful for the first 5, 10, 15, 20, 93 points that this child has scored. I'm not counting what the struggle might be for myself and others in my life if I'm busy counting what's not yet in my life. Gratitude is hoda'ah. Hoda'ah means vidui. It's an admission that I owe you. You owe me nothing. I owe you everything. Happiness and gratitude are the same thing. Let me share with you how, in the words of Rashi, breaks down the pasuk and tells us what's real dveikus. Dveikus is a word that usually is associated to very high madrigas, very high levels of accomplishment, of righteousness, avodas Hashem, serving God. Dveikus is a term you find in Chassidus. It's a term you would associate with someone who's very close to God and doesn't take his mind off God. The word devek, glue, dovuk, cleave, attached to. Let me share with you how Rashi demonstrates to us what is real dveikut, what is real attachment to God. Deuteronomy chapter 29 verse 1. Vayikra Moshe kol b'nei Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the entire Jewish people. Vayoyim alehem, he says to them, Atem re'item et kol asher asah Hashem le'einechem. You have seen, God has shown you, everything He's done for you. And you saw it with your own eyes, Be'eretz Mitzrayim in Egypt. Le'pharoi, to Pharaoh, u'l'chol avoyta v'l'chol atzai. Destroyed the greatest, most powerful nation, empire in world history, in front of your eyes. Hamasas ha'gdoileis asher ra'u einecha. You saw with your own eyes the awesome wonders. Ha'oisos v'ha'moistim ha'gdoilim ahem. V'loi natan Hashem lachem leiv ladas. God, the Almighty, did not give you the thoughts to realize, the full awareness, ve'einayim lirois, and the eyes to see in your mind's eye. He did not let you understand, ve'oiznayim lishmoya, and ears to hear, ad hayom hazeh, till today. And what is he referring to? What is it that God did not fully let me see until today, which is 40 years after the event? Our sages in Avodah Zarah tell us it takes 40 years to reach the maturity of realizing what did God want really from me in the first place, based on this. 40 years, at the end of 40 years living in the Midbar, in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu says, God did not give you the full awareness till now. And what's that awareness of? V'oilech etchem. I directed you, Arba'im Shana, 40 years, Bamidbar, in a desolate desert. Loi v'alu sam useichem aleichem. Clothes did not wear off. V'na'alecha loi v'altam al raglecha. Shoes did not wear down. Lechem lo yachaltem, you didn't eat ordinary food. You got food from heaven, FedExed in before 10 a.m. every morning. By the way, did you hear on the 880 the news? The biggest merger in world history is UPS and FedEx emerging. Did you hear about it? The new name is FedUp. time. Lechem lo yachaltem. You didn't eat ordinary bread. V'yayin v'sheicha lo yishasitem. You drank this special water that tasted anything you wanted to taste from the well of Miriam. Lema'an. Do you know what that was all about? For the sake of. Teidu, so you should know. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am your power. I have a relationship with you. Look at Rashi. V'loi natan Hashem lachem lev ledas. I didn't give you the thoughts, the mind, the heart to know. Says Rashi, lahakir et chastei hakadosh baruch hu uladabek bay. To recognize the kindnesses of Hashem and then to cleave to Him. Said the Mesh Rosh Shiva, Allah v'shalom. What Rashi is telling us is dveikus. To be close to Hashem, to feel close to Hashem, is not more complicated than counting the kindnesses God does for me and has done for me in the past. It's not counting what has not yet done, it's keeping inventory of what's already been done. To seal this point with a perhaps even stronger verse, in chapter 28, Parshas Kisavai, probably the most painful parsha to read. 98 curses! But why? What could I do so wrong to deserve 98 curses, God forbid? Chapter 28, verse 47, suddenly throws an insert. Just before finishing off all these klalot, very painful. The words that describe these curses, we don't have enough words in English to properly describe the pain and the suffering, the anguish, the depression that comes from the negativity of what's being described there. What could I possibly do wrong that's so bad to deserve all that? And God throws in this insert in verse 47. Tachas, language of, in place of. Loi avadta et Hashem Elokecha besimcha, that I wasn't serving God as a happy Jew. I didn't enjoy being a Jew. Mitoiv levav, with a good mind. That's the Malbim. Rabbi Victor Miller, Alav Hashalom, talks about this a lot. Lev toiv refers to thoughts, attitude, mindset. Mitoiv levav, from a good mind, good thoughts, focusing on the good that's already in my life. Meroiv kol, from the abundant good. And what does Rashi say? Scary. You know what Rashi says? But I, Shahaya loy kol tov. When I had it good, I wasn't counting it. And so God says, wait a minute, if I don't get how good God's been to me, what's He going to do to get my attention? Take it away for me to appreciate. So comes along Rabbi Shimon Schwab and helps me realize that life is about counting. Sphera. Counting what's already good in my life. So that when, not if, when things don't always go that easy in the marriage, with the kids, in the health, in the wealth, extended family, when things don't always go well, career, financial setback, medical setback, God forbid, when it doesn't go so well, how will I respond? How strong will I be? Will I be filled with anger, resentment, bitterness, blaming, complaining? It's your fault! No, not you personally, I'm sorry, ma'am. Your fault that this relationship won't work out! I can't believe you behaved this way! I gave the best years of my life! Now, there's no one in this room who could relate to any of this. Some of you have friends who know what I'm talking about. But when I accuse you and blame you and I tell you how you have ruined my career, ruined my life, what am I really doing? Who am I giving responsibility to? The other person. Who am I claiming has to really change? Not me, you. Who am I giving power to as controlling my emotions, my life? I'm giving it to someone else. And God tells me, if He would ever take anything away from me, it's only for me to get back into inventory. My eyes, my heart, my lungs, water, my hands, my feet, my spouse, my children. This is not a guilt trip. On the contrary, what this is really telling us is that happiness is counting the pages that are in my life already. A massive portfolio. And how many pages in that portfolio doesn't depend on how much good there is in my life. It depends much more on how much good I'm counting. David HaMelech had this problem. He had a real problem. Because he was a very honest. He was brutally honest about himself with his Creator. Nobody matched David HaMelech in his ability to pour his heart out to Hashem. Nobody, even Moshe Rabbeinu, the giant king of prayer. David HaMelech wrote 150 love songs of personal conversation, spontaneous, 1-800 Almighty. We don't read Sefer Dvarim as a way to get into a relationship with God. You can, but it's not the same as Tehillim. David HaMelech poured his heart out. He was brutally honest about reality, about pain, about suffering. Did he have an easy life? No! His children, Nachas, Adoniyahu, usurping his authority. Nachas, Avshalom, only tried to assassinate his father a few times. Did he have a decent relationship with his father-in-law? Shalom, Elah tried to kill him! Did he at least have a wife who, though she supported and saved his life more than once, Michal didn't fully appreciate this man? Dancing wildly with joy in front of the Aaron, she thought he was denigrating his dignity in front of his servants and maidservants. David HaMelech was not even appreciated by those closest to him. His father, Yishai, a tzaddik gamur, didn't even call him from the fields to line him up for candidacy. When Shmuel HaNavi came and asked, "I want to see your sons, one of them is next in line after Shaul." David HaMelech, did he have reason to complain, yes or no? Did he have reason to say, "I'm not understood. I'm not appreciated"? Did he have reason, yes or no? Absolutely. My soul drips with pain. Very strong poetical language. He was very honest about his pain. But here was his dilemma. It was a real dilemma. Because if I'm going to tell you what I don't like, God, about my life, about my wife, about my children, about my father-in-law, my son-in-law, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, all extended family, if I'm going to tell you what's not good in my life, God, then I have to be consistent with my own logic and tell you what's good in my life. Listen carefully. If I'm going to complain and tell you what I don't like, then I should at least be consistent with my own logic, if I have a right, if there's a big if I have a right to say what I don't like about my spouse, and my kids, and my personal growth, and my spirituality, and my leadership, and my community, and my neighbors. If I have a right to tell you what I don't like, whether you are my friend, my spouse, my neighbor, my therapist, my creator, if I'm going to tell you what I don't like, I should at least be consistent and keep inventory of what I do like and am appreciative and grateful for. David HaMelech had a problem because he wanted an honest relationship with Hashem. And when he would pour out his heart for the suffering that he really did go through, he had to be consistent with his own logic. And so when he started praising God and thanking him and saying, "Why I love you, why I'm grateful," guess what happened? What happened? He couldn't stop! Because once he began keeping inventory of the good, there was no limit. What's the one line you'll find more than any other in Tehillim? Haidu Lashem. Thank you to God. What for? Look at your life, David. What are you grateful for? Ki tov, because God's good. Huh, you call that good? How good has he been to you? Oh, let me tell you. Once I start listing the good, ki le'olam chasdei, there's no limit to his kindnesses. The question isn't how much more my spouse has to be, my kid has to be, my spiritual growth, my ability to learn, my kavana and tefillah, my relationship with God, my boss appreciating, and when those are more, then I'll be more grateful. I'll have what to be grateful in my life. That's not the question. The question is, what am I counting? What have I been counting till now? Am I keeping inventory? And there's lots of pages. How many pages? As many pages as I count, as I recognize, as I acknowledge. David HaMelech lived his life with that awareness. Let me share with you the story. True story. Never happened. But it's true because the principle is true. Chaim and Becky, sadly Becky was on her deathbed, and she's calling over to Chaim. Chaim! Yes, Becky? Chaim, I've been thinking. You've always been there for me, Chaim. I'll never forget when we were engaged and I became deathly ill, and you said you're not going to break it off. You were there for me. Chaim, I'll never forget when we lost our first child. You were there for me. Chaim, remember that time I fell under the bus and broke my leg? And Chaim, you were there the whole time. And now, Chaim, with this terminal disease, Chaim, you're by my side again. Chaim, you know what I think? Chaim is beaming. He's never heard from me. His wife's so appreciative of him. You know what I think, Chaim? You bring me bad muzzle. I have a choice of what to count or what not to count. And the difference between the two is worlds apart. I can count what I do have. I can count what I don't have. I can do both. But if I'm going to do both, I ought to discover David HaMelech's discovery. That if I'm going to count the kindnesses Hashem's done in my life, Ki le'olam chasdei, there's no end. Zehayim! This day, Asa Hashem, God made this day. David HaMelech began his day. He said, Moed Ani, like we do. Then he said, you know, Rabbeinu Shlomo, I want to do your Ratzon today. I really do. I love you. I want to do your Ratzon. Hashem, I think this is what I'm going to do today that I think will give you pleasure. But if things turn out differently to what I think will give you pleasure, and it doesn't go to my plan of how it works out with the family, extended family, with Amnon and Tamar and who else I'm dealing with, you know what, Rabbeinu Shlomo? If things don't work out the way I want it to work out, with the clients, with the patients, with the co-workers, with the spouse, with the kids, you know what? I'm asking for one thing. I just want to do your will. So if it's your will that things don't turn out my way, I will have already asked in advance that I do your will. So when your will overrides mine, that's fine! Because I want to have a relationship with you even when things don't go the way I think they should go. David HaMelech had a simple clause that whatever would happen to him, he would say, this is God. And therefore, I can still be grateful when apparently I don't see the reason for me to be grateful. There are many mitzvahs in the Torah which demonstrate that the underlying message of that mitzvah is the same message again and again and again. It's all about gratitude. And how am I supposed to demonstrate that gratitude? The mitzvah of Bikurim. Very interesting. The mitzvah of Bikurim, chapter 26, verses 1 through 12. I'm not going to read every pasuk, but we're told that when we conquer the land and we grow any one of these seven species, we bring them to the temple out of gratitude. And what does the pasuk say? The lekachta memreshes kol pri adama shetavi me'atzecha. Bring the first fruits of your land. Asher Hashem Elokecha noiten lach, which Hashem has gifted to you. Noiten is a language of giving, but it's the same language as matana. It's all a gift. Then you place it in a basket, bring it to the temple. The amate elav, and you will say to the kohen, higati ayoyim l'Hashem Elokecha. I'm telling you today, Hashem, your God, God gifted us this land. Say, answer, speak, talk, verbalize. The mitzvah is to verbalize this in God's presence, in the Beis HaMikdash. And what's verbalization? Arami Oved Avi. And now we go into a whole story of Lavan wanting to destroy Yaakov. Vayered Mitzrayma. Then Yaakov's sons enter into Egypt. Vayakas Sham b'mteimat. We were small in population, only 70. Vayisham l'goy gadol v'asim. We came an unbelievable nation, millions. in a matter of a few generations. And now a long discourse about how the Egyptians tried and successfully oppressed us, made us do backbreaking work. But God heard our voice, our screams, and took us out of Egypt, brought us to the land, and here I'm saying thank you for the fruit of this land. What's the deal over here? And what does Rashi tell us? What's he say on the words? V'amata elav, say to the Kohen, speak, verbalize, don't keep it in. She'enecha kafei tova. Tell him, this is what I want to say, and start from the beginning. Jacob was almost destroyed by Laban. And if he was successful, I wouldn't be here being grateful to you, God. In other words, when I don't verbalize, I'm called an ingrate. I'm not telling you what's already good about you. I'm not keeping inventory about me, about you. Kafei tova is because I'm not speaking. The key to gratitude is not in meditation in the mind. The key to gratitude is to say it. We feel different when we say thank you, sorry, I love you, I apologize. Let me share with you what's probably the most common mitzvah of gratitude. You know, we have 100 blessings, right? We've got more actually, but Chayav Adam Levarach, Mea Brachas Lekolayim Lefachais. I have an obligation, according to the code of Jewish law, to say thank you to God at least 100 times a day. But let me ask you, how many mitzvahs are there in the Torah that I'm supposed to bless? How many blessings are there in the Torah? One! You might argue Birkas HaTorah as well, but everyone agrees that Ve'achalta, when you eat bread, Ve'asavata, and you are satisfied, Uberata, now you bless at Hashem Elokecha, Al Ha'aretz HaTov Asher Natan Lach, for the good land He gave us. So I've got one mitzvah in the Torah that mandates me to bless God, to be grateful, to thank Him. But we have hundreds of blessings! What's going on over here? You know, it's interesting. Look at Birkas HaMazon. This is from Rabbi Avigdor Miller. In Birkas HaMazon, the pasuk you'll find in chapter 8 of Deuteronomy, Parshas Ekev, verses 2 through 10. The actual pasuk, the Achalt of Esvata, is in pasuk 10. But the verses that lead up to it gives us an amazing context. And what is that context? V'zacharta! You shall remember eskol! All of what? Haderech asher halicha Hashem Elokecha ze arba'im shana b'midbar. I shall remember the 40 years trek in the wilderness. L'man anosecha l'nasosecha. Because God tested me, squeezed me, to see what would come out. L'das, to know, et asher bilvavecha, what's going on in my mind. Hatishma mitzvosav imloi. Will I observe the mitzvahs out of love or not? And then there's a long discourse all over again about how God took us out of Egypt, brings us to the land. Eretz Tova, a good land. God gave His heksha. Whoa, He said it's good. If God said it's good, you better bet your bottom dollar it's good. Eretz ha-shaloivim miskunas teichal ba'lechem. This is not a land that's dangerous. You can eat your bread, it will flow from the ground. Loi techsa kolva, nothing is going to be missing out. Eretz ha-shav ne'er ba'zal ma'areh tachsav nechoshes. Even though it's a hard land, you're going to produce enough food. You'll be very abundance of food. Ve'achalta v'sivatu barachta. The context of this blessing, of this mitzvah, is gratitude for everything that came before it. Came along Rabbi Victor Miller. Hatzal says a beautiful insight. The second paragraph of Birkas HaMazon, it mentions not just food, it mentions, what does it mention? Bris, Eretz Yisrael, Torah. Keep to the subject! I'm grateful for the food you gave me. Why am I adding on Bris Milah, Eretz Yisrael, I'm adding on Torah. What is this? Hanchal Tel Amaseinu, you gave us this beautiful inheritance. Comes along Rabbi Victor Miller and tells us a beautiful principle. That when I'm satiated and I'm thanking God for the obvious, I should add on all the other things I'm grateful for. Use Birkas HaMazon as a pretext for gratitude. And our sages in their Ruach HaKodesh, with their divine inspiration and ability to see that we're going into the last exile, If we rely on one blessing alone to be grateful the rest of the day, it ain't going to work. And so, Tiknu Hachmeinu Zal Har Bebrachas, in the words of Rambam, first chapter of Hilchos Brachas, the Laws of Blessings, Har Bebrachas Tiknu Hachmeinu Zal, many blessings our sages legislated. But the Torah only mandates one. What are the sages improving on the Torah for? Oh no, 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 they're not improving. They're reclaiming the intent behind the original blessing, which was meant to spill over into gratitude for other things that I'm grateful for in my life. Har betik brachas tiknu achmenuzal kedei lahaskir tabeira tamid, in order to remember my Creator constantly, consistently. That I should remember He is the shoresh, the makar ha-blessing. He is the original source of all the things, people, blessings, money, wealth, health in my life. And that when I blame other people, it's not about blaming. It's not about accusing. It's not about complaining. It's about counting what's already good in you, in me. I remember growing up in England, a song called No Charge. It was called From Mum, No Charge. I pulled off the lyrics. I don't remember the exact tune, so I'm not going to sing it for you. But let me share with you the words from this song. It was a tearjerker of the nth degree. This song hit the top of the charts for 11 weeks consecutively, from July 1976 for 11 weeks. It obviously touched a chord sensitive to every single person. We've all had parents or have parents. Let me share with you. Now a little boy came up to his mum in the kitchen one evening while she was fixing supper. And he handed her a piece of paper he'd been writing on. And after wiping her hands on her apron, she read it, and this is what it said. For mowing the lawn, mum, $5. For making my bed this week, $1. For going in the store, 50 cents. And playing with little brother while you went shopping, 25 cents. Taking out the trash, $1. Getting the good report card, $5. And for raking the yard, $2. Total owed, $14.75. Well, as Mum looked at him standing there expectantly, and I could see the memories flashing through her mind, so she picked up the pen, turning the paper over. This is what she wrote. For 9 months, I carried you. Growing inside me, no charge. For the nights, I sat up with you. No charge. Doctored you and prayed for you. No charge. For the time and the tears that you've cost through the years, there's no charge. And when you add it all up, the cost of my love for you is no charge. For the nights filled with dread and all the worries ahead, no charge. For advice and the knowledge and the cost of your college, no charge. For the toys, food and clothes and even wiping your nose, no charge. There's no charge, son. And when you add it all up, the full cost of my love is no charge. Well, when he finished reading, he had big old tears in his eyes. And he looked up at her and standing there and said, Mother, I sure do love you. Then he took the pen and in great big letters, he wrote, Paid in full. God knows, when you add it all up, the cost of his love for us, no charge. Let me ask you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us constantly. How many of us ever got an oxygen bill? How about gravity bill? Rieti, you have not behaved this week. You missed Shacharis 3 times. No gravity for a week. Can you imagine? And yet, with all that, I am not always that obedient in every area of my life. What does God say? Keep pumping the oxygen, the gravity, no charge. His love for us is no charge. There's no chance of me paying it back because there's no currency to pay it back in. I can't give him gravity and oxygen. It's not the same currency. And God says, bless me. Shakol niyibivare. Gamzul taiva. Kol da'avid rachmana l'tav avid. Thank me for your eyes, pekeach ivrim. Thank me for your spine, zoykev kifufim. Thank you, thank me for your feet, for your shoes, shasali kol sarki, for all your needs. Thank me for water, al netil ajidaim, for my hands. Thank you for my brain. That I've been given a mind more sophisticated than the cock-a-doodle-doo that can tell the difference between night and day in a second, anywhere on earth. But my brain can turn water into hydroelectricity. I can turn concrete into skyscrapers. And God says, you can't pay me in the same currency. But when you say thank you, I say paid in full. Because that's the only currency we're able to repay him. The essence of a Jew is Hida, Yehudi. My dear Ani, I'm here to be grateful. And what is that gratitude? Rabba emuna secha. Abundant is your emuna. God's emuna? Yes, in us. Great is your faith in me that I can change and become more grateful, more loving, more appreciative, more thankful to myself. That I woke up this morning, that means you appreciate me. I must be appreciable. And you want me to interact with those closest to me that you gifted in my life so that I become more loving and appreciative and decrease the amount of hurtful statements, painful choice of words, harsh words, sarcasm, insults, comparisons. You're just like your mother! Not you, Buzzy, I'm sorry. And I start reducing the accusations, the complaints, the blaming, the denying, the excusing, until I become what I'm supposed to be, a Yehudi. A Jew is a thank-youer, a moideh ani. I will close. But essentially, I only have two responses in this world. Denial of good or gratitude for good. It falls somewhere in those two. I'm a mixture of both. But what does God want me to be? Look at the first man, Adam. He had a chance. God actually gave him a chance. Adam, why are you naked and embarrassed? You weren't embarrassed about your nakedness a few minutes ago. Did you eat from the tree I asked you not to eat from? Why didn't God just zap him? He knew he ate from the tree. The only one mitzvah he had, he blew it. Why did you say you blew it? And what's the answer? Why didn't God just zap him? Why did he ask him a question? What was he inviting Adam to do? To say, I'm sorry. Medrash Haggadah claims, had Adam said sorry, Chatati, if he said that one word, I made a mistake, God would have forgiven him on the spot. But what did Adam do?
He denied
Isha. Ha Isha! Sorry, I didn't mean to wake you up. I'm sorry. Ha Isha, the woman! Who's he blaming? Ashena, Hatai Madi! That you gifted to stand by me! Whoa! Who's he blaming? God! So what did God say to Adam? I'll deal with you later. He turns to Eve and says, why did you eat from the tree? Why did he ask a question? Just said you ate from the tree! Why did he just zap her straight away? Why did he ask her, why did you eat from the tree? What was he inviting her to say?
I'm so sorry.
Please forgive me. What was her answer? That's fake. Persuaded me. Look at this scenario. Adam is busy blaming the snake. Adam's busy blaming Chava. Chava's busy blaming the snake. Do you ever wonder why God didn't ask the snake? Didn't have a leg to stand on. English humor. It's not Hazal. It's not safe. It's okay. Adam's busy blaming. Chava's busy blaming. And I play the blame game. I've got two choices. That when things go wrong, it's your fault. Instead of admitting, Rebbeinu Shleilam, what you really want me to do when things go wrong is remind myself of all the times things were going right till now. But oy chahaya loy kolto, says Rashi in that verse. Tachas aloy shaloy vata Hashem elokecha besimcha, v'toyv leivav miroyv kol, to keep inventory while it was good, and to admit that the only person you want to change is me. But when I blame others, complain about others, accuse others, I'm playing the blame game, where instead of looking at myself, I'm looking at other people as responsible. And God says, I'm the only one who was put in this world to change me. And if I try to change you, how many people in this room, in this shul here, really know of someone in their life they succeeded in changing by trying to change them? Is there anyone? Nobody. We don't change anybody. The most we can do is change ourselves. And then the person you're in a relationship with will be responding to a different me. But if I try to change you, never happened in history. I will close, and I truly mean it. Chaim and Becky. They passed away about 97, 98 years old. And they come up to Shemayim in heaven. The way it works there is Heavenly Boulevard. Anyone who passed away last gets the most recent built home. And the way it is, each home is successfully larger than the previous one. So Chaim Becky has been taken down Heavenly Boulevard by the Archangel Gabriel and is showing them these beautiful homes and mansions, palaces. Finally gets the last one. 14 bedrooms! Indoor jacuzzi, outdoor jacuzzi. And Chaim says, this is all for us? He says, yes, all yours. Are you sure? He says, yes, all yours. Indoor swimming pool, outdoor swimming pool. Indoor tennis, outdoor tennis. This is all ours? He says, yes, I told you already. And Becky said, Chaim, what's the matter? You look like you're upset. Of course I'm upset. What's the matter? We just arrived in heaven and you're already angry? Yes, I'm angry at you. At me? I said nothing. I just arrived here. This is heaven already. What's the matter with you? I'll tell you what's the matter with me. You and your foolish cholesterol and exercise programs. We could have had this 20 years ago. I can spend my life and perhaps beyond complaining about what I could have had and didn't but should have. But God put me here. Not to count what I don't have, but to be grateful for what I already have. And that is training me that when He blesses me with more, I'll count that too. Happiness and gratitude is synonymous. Thank you for your patience.